Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. July 4, 2019. My thoughts on Twitter, July 4, 2019. Don't wait for the Creator to invite you to begin the spiritual work. You always have to be the one to begin. Therefore, begin right now. If I am not for myself, then who is for me? The Creator has already done his part, by eliciting a thought about this in you. One can check the states on the spiritual path by how much the ascents and descents, if it is for the Creator's sake, do not affect one's spiritual work, as if one is constantly in adhesion with the Creator. Otherwise one must ask for correction. With democracy, egoism pushes minorities to demand equal rights. Afterwards, they dictate their will to the majority. Society, to avoid being accused of racism, etc., concedes. The minority's selfishness begins to stifle society with its demands. In this state, society does not know what to do. July 4, time to celebrate and reflect. From my Facebook page, Michael Leitman, July 4, 2019. American pride is at its lowest since it started to be measured about 2 decades ago. That is the conclusion of a recent Gallup poll showing that only 70% of US adults say they are proud to be Americans. Fewer than half, 45%, are extremely proud. This marks the second consecutive year that this percentage falls below the majority of the population. The discontent is mainly attributed to the current state of the political climate and social well-being. Therefore, this 4th of July marks a good opportunity for reflection on the future Americans want for the country before the divisions intensify to a painful climax. Only a common sense of unity can avert such a dire path. America's escalating politically based divisions are becoming increasingly virulent every day. The situation seems so volatile that a social explosion could ignite suddenly if political passions manifest as physical violence or killings from one side or the other. Of course, we hope that this will not happen because it could rapidly destabilize the entire country. Today, America is under major pressure from inside and outside the country. Internally, immigration policies and their implementation are increasing political and social tensions, the divisions between immigrants of European origin and others are becoming more dramatic, and the rapidly growing Muslim population is reshaping American society. There are many different interest groups in America that hold no perception of themselves as part of one unified body under the same roof. As part of the evolution of any society, human egoism grows and every group makes exaggerated demands for its own benefit at the expense of others. If no efforts are made toward uniting for the sake of a common enterprise, then I fear for America's positive future. Money, weapons and laws will all be of no help. Externally, Europe is distancing itself from America and moving closer to Russia and China, losing its independent hegemonic power and strength in the international arena. Such a scenario might become a dangerous situation for America considering the ability of foreign interests to debilitate the US industry and social fabric for their own gain. President Trump has taken US economy to record level highs, but it is insufficient without the implementation of a social agenda for more national cohesion. So far, there are no signs pointing in that direction. Therefore, internal political forces will take advantage of this vacuum to create even more tensions and separations to the point of a social outburst. Given the current state of affairs, what does America's positive future depend on? America's positive future depends solely on strengthening its social fabric so that people can disagree and maintain their differences while still allowing the well-being of the American family to prevail above their feuds. Unity should be the centerpiece around which other agendas gravitate. Conversely, a cold-hearted and hostile social atmosphere enslaves each interest group to their selfish demands and blocks their entrance to the pursuit of liberty, happiness and a prosperous and peaceful life for all. That lofty goal can only be achieved when the common interest is fulfilled by every stakeholder. As written by foremost Kabbalist Yehuda Ashlag, if all the nations of the world consent that no man should care for himself but only for others, war shall cease to exist, the writings of the last generation. Nothing is worse than indifference. Indifference is a result of the discrepancy of properties. Indifference is given to a person so he discovers who he really is without influence from above or the influence of the group. Through the group, I also receive influence from above because only through the group can I connect with the Creator and awaken His influence by myself. Indifference is the most difficult thing. It testifies to the fact that a person has not established a devoted connection with the group, and through it, with the Creator. The chain, Israel, the Torah, and the Creator does not work, and therefore, indifference appears. There is nothing worse than that. Even conflict or disagreement is better, because it is at least a scrutiny. Indifference prevents you from any kind of scrutiny and one can get stuck in it for years. Then awakening will come because a person is not alone, but is a part of a broken system. If other souls connected with the root of his soul begin to change and correct themselves, then they awaken him. He may even give up on spiritual advancement, but he suddenly wakes up because others need his presence and participation in reaching correction. At the lowest level, indifference manifests in the fact that a person falls into this world and is satisfied with it, egotistically enjoying his life. He is only concerned with material fulfillment and becomes indifferent to spiritual advancement. The point in the heart stops shining because a person has not made enough of an effort to connect with his friends, with the teacher, and with the method. Pride disallowed his connection to others. He felt stronger and smarter than others and it knocked him down. A person can invest tremendous energy in material matters, but can completely cool down to spirituality. It seems to him that he will succeed and earn a fortune, and this is a huge obstacle. The group is obliged to sustain a sense of equality in each member. Although we are all different, some are more intuitive, others more knowledgeable, we all should be on an equal footing with no advantage of one over the others. The group must help a person on this point or his pride will grow and deflect him from the path. This is called rescuing him from prison. He can feel at his best and completely fine, confident, and strong, and this is the egoistic prison. Because of this, he finds himself in a turbulent stream, carrying him to a high waterfall where he will be smashed into pieces. Indifference is a very important feeling because it shows how much I lack the greatness of the Creator. I must therefore increase the importance of all the resources, the group, the teacher, the books, and the method. Indifference and even rejection constantly appear and we must overcome them, working in such a way. These are necessary stages, blows, on the path. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah Lesson, June 11, 2019, Writings of Balha Sulam Preface to the Wisdom of Kabbalah, Items 11-16. Restriction and Blow. Restriction, Tsimtsum, is when I close my desire, disallowing myself to receive pleasure, like a baby who tightly squeezes his mouth shut and refuses to eat. A blow, Bitush, already assumes a condition. If I have the opportunity to eat for the mother's pleasure, then I will happily open my mouth. But I do not have such an opportunity right now, so what do I do? Help me, give me the desire to please you, and I will be happy to open myself to receive. The restriction is an unconditional action, and the blow occurs on the condition that I am ready to take pleasure if there is an adhesion between us. In the blow, my goal is connection. While in restriction there is no goal of connecting, only preventing yourself from receiving. I do not want any contact because I have no strength for more, only to restrict myself. Otherwise, I will burn with shame. The striking merger is already above shame. I no longer take shame into account, but only think about love and the connection between us, rising above selfishness. With a blow, I show that I am ready to receive a treat, not for myself, but only for the pleasure of the host. At first we check our relationship with the host, and only when this spiritual connection of the heart has arisen can we translate it into action, and it descends into matter, into the desire to enjoy. Therefore, first of all, the decision is made in the rush of the Patsuf, in pure thoughts and feelings, disconnected from the clothing of the light in the desire, in matter. You can then perform this action, step by step, from easy to complex. The light of Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Higher, and Yehidah. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah Lesson, the 17th of June 2019, Writings of Baal HaSulam, Preface to the Wisdom of Kabbalah. How to respond to the Creator's tremors? Question: how does one properly respond to the internal shocks that are awakened by the Creator? Should we disagree with what He sent? After all, He is the good that does good. How can I be against what He aroused in me? Answer: no way. You should react only in the direction of even greater connection between us. Only in this way can you force His influence on us to be more positive and kind. To the extent of our connection between us, we influence Him in such a way that we positively change His governance. Question: how do I recognize that He pushes me precisely to that, exactly toward what He is correcting? Answer: for this you have to listen to Kabbalists. Until you enter the system, you will not recognize anything. From the Kabbalah Lesson in Russian, the 17th of March 2019. New Life Number 1102. Intolerance in the International Arena.
Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yerush Adarel. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about belligerence in the international arena. We're living in an ever-changing world with ever-developing technologies and whatnot, but belligerence remains as is, shaping all of our relations, the relations between countries and organizations, and we'd like to understand, where is it all headed? Be with us, Yael, please. Yeah, if in the past, belligerence between countries came in the form of wars, face-to-face wars, physical wars, then today things kind of changed, and power in the international arena nowadays isn't necessarily a physical force in the form of a strong army or war. Today we don't see so many real face-to-face wars, but these are more technological wars, trade wars. And I'd like to ask today, what is force from the international point of view? What makes a country strong? A country's strength is measured in the extent to which a country can destroy another country, technologically wise. To disconnect it from the international internet, other media lines, from international supplies, because all of us have reached a state where we're all interdependent because of the network of connections that we're in. Today, success depends on the extent to which I'm in control of, let's call it, the supply pipelines of a certain country. And we see, like the Americans, they put different sanctions on other countries. They close certain media lines, provision lines, and this is today's, the gist of today's war. And therefore I think that wars in the near future, these aren't going to be physical wars using soldiers and so on, but these will be wars between banks, around the provision of supplies, raw materials, merchandise. Because today, to disconnect the country from these things, by that, you harm it far beyond any bombs that you can throw on it. So, it's no problem. Today, the weapons that are being developed aren't against human beings. If, for example, I take over the power plants of a certain country, then that's it. Do I need an army then? No. All I need is just one person who knows how to work with a computer, a real nerd. And he can do something that can affect an entire country. So, is it possible to say that today power is something that's more on the intellectual level? Of course. While I was asking, I was thinking, because I suppose that also in the past, even in ancient times, the mind was power. The mind controlled the weapons and developed weapons. And weapons, up until our times, where today is still missiles, and aircraft carriers and so on. And look how many tons of metal and so on. But eventually what we see is that the world is gradually shifting to technological warfare. So, man's strength was always his mind, even thousands of years ago, even in face-to-face wars back then. I'm sure that the smarter you were, for sure. So, the innovation isn't the mind. It's not that man's new weapon is the mind. The mind is always man's weapon. What changed is the way it's being used. Like previously you said, a person can sit with his keyboard and shut down a country. Right. So what does it say about belligerence in the international arena? If previously the mind was always the key to victory, what changed today? Because you're working with the mind, almost with no means. And back then, there were means. For example, they had a bow and arrow for thousands and thousands of generations. Bow and arrow. And suddenly, they invented a bow that isn't 2 meters long, but that's 1 meter long. Do you know what it gave? I can move between the trees, I can ride horses, I can do this, I can do that. Just one small, simple thing. It's the same principle. It was truly a very clever invention. And today, what counts is the power of the mind, barely using any means. Meaning there's a kind of a developmental process here. Everything is moving into a more and more hidden form, as if spiritual, but very powerful, something very small, like a nuclear bomb. What do you have there all in all? You can hold it in your hand. Compared to conventional explosives. Yeah, but the principle of belligerence between countries, is it something that can change? Do you see any chance of it changing? It'll change when mankind will start feeling that it's shifting to mind wars. Meaning that we will start fighting through our thoughts. And then countries don't matter anymore. No, of course, the countries remain, but each and every country will have to build an army, and it's already being done. Trying to build an army that will fight by the power of thought. And its goal being what? To influence the civilians, the leadership, everyone. Civilians, the government, even computers, so that they'll yield to my demands or what? That's as always. The goals are the same goals. to subdue someone else? Of course, that goes without saying. So what is the power of thought for? What is belligerence for? In order to subdue someone else. You said that in the future, everything will shift to mind wars. What do you mean by mind wars? Because the power of thought is the strongest force. But what is that force? The power of thought. It's like what you said before, that I'm sitting on a computer and I can shut down half the country because I'm smart. No, that's the power of wisdom. That's not the power of thought. What is it then? That you're doing it only with your thoughts, without a computer, that I control things only with my thoughts. This is what the future holds for us? Yeah. So a country will be stronger than another country to the extent of power of thought that it can exert? Yeah? Can you give me an example for the power of thought? No. Because it's something that we're not familiar with yet? Right. And this is where we're headed? Let's hope we're not. Because it's destructive? Because it's an unlimited force. It's really destructive? Yeah? Because it's really interesting, so I want to ask about it. I don't want to toy around with it. I want to ask about belligerence in the international arena. How's a country supposed to react to belligerence that's exerted against it? What's the smart thing to do? It depends who and what. You can't surrender. I don't know. Maybe you have no choice and you do have to surrender. We saw such examples in history. What can you do? Either to die or to be a slave. So maybe being a slave is preferable instead of dying, to be under the sovereignty of some other country. There are many countries that choose to exist that way. Isn't Israel looking to be under the wings of the United States? Don't we yield because of that in different matters? We do. I think that we're trying to really develop technologies and all those things, like trade, technology, financial technologies, that this is where all the power is nowadays. We also have a strong army, but in order to be as strong as we can in our own right, we try. Yeah, but it's all, you know, relatively, it's all limited. Okay, I want to ask about something else. There are countries in the world that are very belligerent, and they have a certain international image. There are other countries that are less belligerent, but they're seen as much more belligerent. There are surveys that say that Israel is perceived as a very belligerent country, very, very belligerent. Now I, as an Israeli, I was in the army, I had different interactions with people, I live here in the country, I know the relationships from within the country. And this is how I see it. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's clear to me that Israel is much more gentle than other countries, without giving examples, that truly erase other nations. And Israel is trying, in the given circumstances, not to do it as much as possible. So how is it that the international community sees us as very belligerent, while objectively, I'm not that way, and there are countries that are much worse in this respect. How do you explain this phenomenon? I don't explain it. I understand it. I'm looking from the outside in, and I see how the entire world's looking at you, saying that you want to rule the entire world, and you are. You're ruling and controlling the entire world, and the entire world is suffering because of you, and you're the worst person in the world possibly, and so on. This is what the entire world thinks about you. Didn't you know? We do, but it seems unproportional. The way it seems to you, miss, I'm sorry, but that's not important. What's important is what they think, not what you think. The question is, why do they think that, even though that we know that objectively wise, it's incorrect? You're wrong? If 8 billion people Say about you and your people that you're using the entire world and that you're wrongdoers and that your belligerence, specifically in the international arena, is beyond any proportion. Then what do you mean that you're saying that it's not so? How can you say no if there are 8 billion people that say that it is? Explain, please. You simply don't see it. So I have to, as if, shut my eyes and say, you're right. Because it's impossible that 10 million, even less, 5 million, suppose, in Israel, will tell 5 billion, suppose, in the world that they're wrong. Such a thing does not exist in nature. We have to accept it as a fact in advance. Okay, I have a question. You weren't born in Israel, right? Right. Where were you born? In Russia. And now you're living in Israel for the past 45 years. And in general, you're a person who really traveled the world. During the year, you traveled to many countries. You saw many countries in the world, and you felt the atmosphere there. The way you feel it, is the state of Israel a belligerent country compared to other countries? How do you measure belligerence? I'm asking you, from your impression, is Israel a belligerent country? No, not at all. But the problem is not how belligerent it is that it wants to control others, but the extent to which others feel that it controls them. That's the problem. And here we have to pay attention. Why is it happening the way it is? And I'm saying that they're right, and we're not. I, as an Israeli citizen, when I go to different places in the world, I have a feeling that they're thinking about me that I'm controlling them. I have this very clear feeling. I feel very uncomfortable, as though I stole from the entire world. I have such a feeling, and this is what they think. And then I look at them and I think, how civilized they truly are. How good and nice these people are, because they know that I'm stealing from them and that I'm using them and the rest of the world, and still they treat me favorably. You're using them? You're stealing from them? Yeah. What? Their happiness, their well-being, the best possible things, all the wars are because of me, all the problems are because of me, all of the disasters are because of me. The Book of Zohar writes about it very clearly. Open the Book of Zohar and see what it says there. So how could it be? I simply believe in what they say. To the contrary, I'm thinking about them, how good they really are, that there's their enemy here, and they're treating me nicely. They don't kill me on the spot. Can you explain what you just said? Because it's really hard to grasp. Israelis don't grasp it for sure, but it's something that we'll have to learn one way or another. Where does this gap come from that we feel that it's like a little child? That no matter how much you tell him, don't do this, look what you did, he says, it's not me, but this and that, it happened by itself. And this, he did it. It's everyone but him. But a little child, he doesn't understand the big picture, he doesn't see it. Are we still little children, or aren't we? What don't we see? We don't see that we're to blame for all the troubles of the world. How? Can you open our eyes? Because we're not connecting, and we're not showing all of mankind the secret of connection. And why is that our role? Why do we have to do it? It's our role since the birth of our nation. Our nation was born as an ingathering of the representatives of all nations that got together around Abraham, who connected them, and therefore, all in all, we have to set an example of connection between all nations. If this example will exist, then it will show all nations how to connect. And then the world will reach a state of good and benevolence. So if I look at the relations between countries and belligerence between countries, in this respect, how does the world see us? The world sees us as those that owe to the world a good example of a good life, and that we're thieves because we're robbing the entire world of a good life. We don't have a good life. No problem. I don't mind what your situation is. What I mind is my situation. How do they know it and we don't? They feel it instinctively. They don't exactly know what's going on, only they have this very clear, profound inner feeling that you're stealing the good fortune, the good life, a good future from the entire world. How are you doing it? It's unknown. There are many conspiracies around it, but this is what you're doing for sure, and I agree with them. How is Israel supposed to behave? It has to ask itself, what's going on? What's the reason for anti-Semitism? Let's investigate it. Let's really know why we hated and what do we have to do. Looking at our foreign relations and the state of security in Israel, I see that our main concern as Israelis that are living here is to make sure that we'll have some kind of protective force, military and technological force, for us to always be smarter than the many enemies that want to eradicate us in any given moment. Now, after our analysis of belligerence in the international arena, I want for you to take me now to the Israel of tomorrow. If Israel wants to promise its good future, because we have no peace and quiet here, you go to sleep, you never know, you can wake up to a missile alarm. Meaning it's something really delusional. I'm sure that no person in no country in the world lives this way. So on the one hand, we're a military, technological, high-tech superpower. On the other hand, the world thinks that we're belligerent, even though that we don't want to control anyone. And yet from another side, it's unclear what do we really have to do in order to advance to a better place in regard to the international arena. What is that thing that we have to focus on in order to become a country that will simply be able to live in peace? What do we need in order to live in peace? You have the secret of connection that you're not revealing to everyone. This I don't understand. Israel has to invest in cyber warfare, military, what? You have the secret of how to connect people. And the method of how to connect, how to come together, how to be good and nice towards each other, this formula, you're not revealing it or using it to your own benefit or to the benefit of others, and you have to show everyone how to come together in a good and nice way and to teach it to everyone. That's called to be light unto the nations. So what field should we develop in research? The field of connection. And what is that? We are a collection and in gathering of all nations at our basis. If you will connect the Israelis with one another, by that you will show the entire world how to connect with one another in a good and nice way. Because our foundation is that we're the representatives of all nations. How will this change the world? Everyone will follow us in the direction of connection. And what will the relationships between countries look like in this state? Friendly. Everyone will connect. There will be no difference between countries. Everyone will be like one country, one planet. You're describing two very different and extreme states. The one is the one that we have today, where everyone is trying to exert as much strength as possible in order to yield the others. And the struggle is only becoming more sophisticated, but it's been going on for ages. This is one state. Another state is that you're saying that everyone, including everyone, can live in great harmony. The button that you have to push that shifts you from the first state of belligerence, wars, suffering to the other state depends on the Jews. We have the button? Yeah? If they arrange good relations, friendly relations between them, like in a family, like brothers, then their force influences the entire world, and the entire world starts coming closer together. It means that we have to start doing this between us here in Israel. Yeah, we and only we have to do it. And what do we have to do? We have to know how to connect, how to come together in a good, a nice way. How do we become closer, where we care about each other? How do we try to establish such relations in our society, in our country? The main thing is the connection through TENS. That this is something that we're a bit more experienced in. Through what? TENS. It's like Moses that connected the entire nation into TENS and connected those TENS into one mechanism. Groups of 10 people? Yeah. And what happens inside such a group? Inside such a group, we reach connection, a state where everyone feels everyone as one, that they're united. So, just to see, you're saying that if Israel wants to live in peace, a more advanced army won't help, neither more advanced technologies or smarter people, or the power of thought, like we said before, it's not enough. We have to bring in another force called the force of connection between people, that first of all we have to generate it here, inside the country, in interactions that we won't be able to talk about today, but between people that are qualitatively more connected in small groups, and gradually it goes and grows until this entire country, instead of having nuclear power plants, will have power plants that generate connection between people. Yeah. Suppose Israel creates this kind of force, that this is what we have to develop now, suppose we succeed. This force influences the entire world. And then, how will the international arena, what will it look like? We stop acting belligerently. And what then? We will control them by the force of connection. And then they will all start moving in the direction of connecting with each other. Why? Because we will insert into the hearts and minds of all nations, countries, governments, the desire to be connected by our method. You said that future warfare isn't in the power of wisdom, like a person with a computer can shut down a country, but in the power of thought. Yeah. Do you really believe that by the power of thought that directs people at connection instead of fighting all the time, we, Israel, can win with this vision, with this new direction? Can we defeat the world? Yes, and only because there is no greater force, power, than the power of connection. Because also, it is supported by the integral nature, completely. Is this what you meant when you said that it's possible to win by the power of thought? Yeah? Last question, because it's really interesting. If next to me there are millions of people, today there are even billions, that want to destroy Israel, and we're barely a few millions here. Suppose I even flow with you, Dr. Lightman, will invest in developing this force that connects people. How can we, such a small quantity of people that will start inserting into this world thoughts about connection between people, will be able to defeat this tremendous desire of billions to destroy us? Because we are the microprocessor of the entire world. We don't need more than that. A small group, when it reaches connection, it becomes the connector, This is what it means to be a kingdom of priests. It becomes the connector between the upper force and all of mankind. And it as if determines the form of mankind, the form of connection, without belligerence. This is amazing, Dr. Lightman. Thank you very much. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.